This episode is presented by Invest Puerto Rico. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place.
Hi everyone, it's Natasha Mascarenhas. I'm jumping in really quickly here to say, one, I am super excited for you guys to listen to this conversation. Marianne is taking over Equity Wednesday for this week, and she did a great job interviewing GGV's Hans Tung. Number two, though, there is a little bit of technical issues. So the audio quality was not up to our usual standard. Thank you for understanding. We hope you enjoy the conversation anyways, and I promise there are some really great gems. Let's listen in.
Hello, and welcome back to Equity, a podcast about the business of startups, where we unpack the numbers and nuance behind the headlines. I'm Marianne Acevedo. I'm filling in for Natasha Mascarenhas. Big shoes to fill, but I'm excited to be here. This is our Wednesday show where we niche down to a single person, talk about their work, and unpack the rest. Today, I'm very excited to say we're talking to Hans Tung, managing partner at GGV Capital, who focuses on early stage investments across the global digital economy ecosystem. Hans also oversees GGV's DE&I initiatives, as well as co-hosting his own podcast, Evolving for the Next Billion. Welcome to the show, Hans. Happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Marianne. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, likewise. So today we're going to talk about a few things, including the investment landscape, present and future, lessons that startups can learn from layoffs, and what companies can do to keep themselves relevant, even during a downturn. So we talked not that long ago, actually, Hans. It was just a few months back. And obviously, the environment has changed even since then. But at the time, you were telling me that you felt like 2023 could be the year of down rounds. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, well, back in 2022, right after war broke out in Ukraine, we started seeing volatility in supply chain, volatility in commodity prices, and macro environment changed dramatically with a rising interest rate, rising inflation rate, and China was still in lockdown. So we started seeing some of our public portfolio, their stock prices showing correction. And within our own portfolio, we saw sort of consumer spending sort of go down for consumer-facing companies over a period of the next 6 months. We start seeing that happening to some of the enterprise spending being slowed down and impact the enterprise portfolio as well. So we're not special in that sense. A lot of what's happening in venture, tech venture market and their portfolios all got impacted as well. So given what we have learned from 2008, we started actively encouraging our portfolio as early as sort of end of Q1, early Q2 last year to start preparing for what's coming, what's ahead. Obviously, many of them heard from us in March, April 2020 timeframe, and that turned out to be a huge boost for digitization and acceleration of digitization around the world. So some of the founders obviously were trying to figure out if any headwind that they see is temporary or something that they need to embrace. But given our experience before, despite what we saw with the happened in 2020, we knew 2022 could be totally different. And a lot of our companies started thinking ahead about how to preserve cash. One of the things we advised our companies back in Q2 last year in 2022 was see if you can do 24 months, if not 36 months. So we get the account at the end of Q2 last year, and roughly 78% of our portfolio by value have cash runway of 24 months or more at that point in time. Somewhere between 60-65% of portfolio value at a cash runway of 36 months or more. We encourage our portfolio even today to keep at least 18 months, ideally 24 months of cash runway on their balance sheet. Obviously, the more the better. And that's something that not as easy for founders to, or even young VCs around the table to recognize that. We're no longer in this sort of growth mindset. We're in a sort of cash preservation kind of mode, because if you can last longer than your competitor, you're more likely to wait out this period of downturn. No one can predict how long this world exists. You look at what happened in 2000 and 2008, each took about 36 months for the economy to bounce back. And for the stock market, it took about 18, 24 months or so. 2000 a little bit longer, 2008 a little bit shorter. They look back even further when in a period we see high inflation rate and high interest rate. The most comparable will be in the early 1980s. I remember that's when I moved to California from Taiwan in 1983, and it's the economy was slow. And it wasn't until the 90s came and the rise of internet went down that changed a lot of things, and globalization took over at that point in time to make it a lot easier for growth to happen. So we're mindful of the lessons we learned in the past. Obviously, history doesn't always repeat itself, but there are a lot of similarities and lessons we learn from, and seeing how our founders get through this time period.
Yeah, I mean, you had mentioned, though, that for companies that are starting to look ahead and deciding that they do want to go ahead and raise some more capital, that raising at a down round is better than running out of cash. So I think that, you know, it's great that you're advising them to be more conservative with their cash. Obviously, this was a huge problem in 2021 and 2022, where so many companies were burning cash at a very rapid rate and unable to keep up in terms of revenue. So clearly, there are going to be some people or some companies that need to raise. And so down rounds, not an evil word, not an evil phrase, in your opinion, still?
That's correct. One of the things I like to mention in the board meeting is that 100% zero is still zero. So it's we all are mindful of the dilution to ourselves, to our stakeholders, to our employees, as investors, and so forth. But most importantly, companies to survive, to have a chance to build something massive later. So down rounds is part of the necessary evil that you have to be able to be comfortable facing in the market like this. We had a teacher, Bruce Feld, who was CFO of public trade company Dilma, our most recent founders and leaders talk. And he said something extremely insightful. He said that during the bull market, it's important to have that growth mindset, because you want to stay ahead of a competitor and continue to grow and grow faster in the market, and so that you'll get recognized both internally and externally. But at the same time, in a market like this, that framework has shifted to cash preservation. And you want to be around when you're competitive out of cash, or the employees and leaving them and joining you. So you want to constantly be thinking about how you do scenario planning. So to be sophisticated, he mentioned that for Dono, they had 9 scenarios they planned for different kind of macro conditions and factors. So if something happened externally or planning a business, they kind of know exactly which of the next scenario need to get to. This way, they can really plan ahead and think through what needs to be done. So it's a lot more than yes or no, high or low, but figuring out what are the different business conditions that will affect different kind of outcome and response from the team, you know, to deal with the scenario that's at hand. So if something happened, that's great. This is scenario 3 we're in now. Something else happened, now we're in scenario 6. And that's an amazing way to have develop that discipline to be able to plan ahead.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things we talked about is that your pace of investing as a firm definitely slowed down last year. And I think that was on par with many other VC firms who have taken a step back and they're being more cautious with their investments. Do you anticipate that to continue in 2023 and overall, and then and for GGV? And in particular, of course, you know, I'm going to be asking about fintech because that's my favorite subject.
Sure. That's a good question. I mean, a lot of people think about sort of pace from standpoint for every fund that we're managing, that diversification of time is important. 2021 obviously was a fast growth year, so some of the funds end up investing all their money in the most recent fund in 1 year. And when you do that, you don't get the benefit of diversification of time. And so we try to have 2.5 year kind of pace to what we do in the bull market, close more 2 years or under. In a period like this, it ends up being more than 2.5 years, if not more. This way, we get the benefit of diversification of time, but still investing every year. So as a result of that, we'll look at what happened in 2022. Our pace fell 50% off to our investing pace in 2021, but we're still investing versus someone else who may not be investing at all in 2022. So our job is figuring out staying in the market and always be there for the amazing founders with amazing vision that we want to support and back. So we start to stay engaged, even if we adjust the pace of the fund from time to time, given with a macro risk. Again, in terms of scenario planning, we can shorten or elongate the duration of the fund, you know, give us the best diversification of time.
Yeah, so far this year, I have covered a number of M&As in the fintech space. This is not entirely unexpected. Many people were predicting this would happen, considering that the IPO market has pretty much dried up. What do you think? Are you surprised by all this M&A? Do you think we're going to see even more of it as the months go on this year?
I think you definitely will see more M&As as companies think about what they want to stay standalone, or they think that 1+1 is greater than 2. they would explore options. An example I'm thinking of, it may not be in fintech directly, but I was on the board of Poshmark, and it was sought after by a neighbor from South Korea, and ended up acquiring Poshmark for over $1.6, $1.7 billion. So we do know that in this time period, the strategics are thinking, some of them are thinking ahead with cash on their balance sheet to make the right acquisitions that in a bull market, they may not have a chance to do so. And I always feel that the companies are not sold, they're bought. So it's having the active dialogue with strategic through good and bad time, just to stay in touch. You never know what happens. And those investments in relationship go a long way to give you a lot more options when you want them.
What about this generative AI craze? I feel like it's everywhere right now. How do you see this impacting the startup world and fintechs as well? Do you think it's going to penetrate this space too?
Yeah, I mean, with the use of ChatGPT, you see a lot more applications of that. And the version 4 will be even more robust than version 3. So there's definitely a lot of things happening in many sectors. And I think fintech will be impacted as well. So we're already seeing it happening in tech, in commerce, in content publishing. So I think more will be coming. In the last decade would be the decade of FANGs and then the rise of the Chinese internet giants. I think this coming decade, a lot will be driven by AI in a way that people thought may be possible back in 2015. But DeepMind, won that go game. But now it's a lot more exciting in the acceleration of what's called Cup.
And what about the crypto space? I mean, obviously 2022 was a very difficult year for crypto. What do you see happening there in 2023?
Well, unlike generative AI, the strategics are very active there. You see Microsoft and you see their moves with OpenAI will prompt other big strategics for their response. It's just a matter of time. So versus that, I almost feel that's the next bubble that's forming. And with crypto, yes, it's a massive correction. But at the same time, the underlying logic for blockchain is still there. The need for flight to safety with at least somewhat a decentralized currency is still there as well. So I feel that it's either with crypto, it's either too hot or it's too damned. So it's still an area we'll look at for investments and find the best teams that we can click with to be able to help them to scale their business over time. So when it's too hot, we worry about the bubble. And now we feel like it's over-penalized and there's still good team building interesting companies and tools that can help the ecosystem to scale.
What's next in tech? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's an innovations paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/TechCrunch.
Yeah, so in the crypto space, obviously, we saw a lot of layoffs over the past few months. And this has not just been exclusive to crypto. Unfortunately, we've seen, tens of thousands of layoffs in the tech space over the past year or so. One of the things we talked about last time was that you were saying that this could start spilling over into Fortune 500 companies as well. All these layoffs could mean different things for startups. For one, there's more talent available for those that are in a position to hire, right? They all of a sudden,
yes.
There are people that may have been not at all interested in working for a startup at one point, suddenly much more open to it.
Yeah.
And also, for example, we were baffled by things like Microsoft, investing so much money into OpenAI just days after announcing massive layoffs. So would love to just hear your thoughts on all these layoffs that are happening, what lessons startups can take away from them, just to get your perspective, because I know you were on a podcast last year. It was titled Finding Success and Failure.
Right.
So I feel like this is a topic that you've thought about.
Right. You look at what happened in 2000 with the first internet, this little bubble bursted. A lot of talent that learned quite a bit from the early stage of the internet ended up joining a lot of offline economy companies. And that ushered in more receptivity to adopting new technologies in Fortune 1000 companies all over the world throughout the 2000s. This time, a lot of the talent that has unfortunately been let go in the last 6 to 9 months, are most of them, and many of them, I wouldn't say most, but many of them will be able to find a job within the next 1 month or 2 months. So you can tell they're there's still a lot of growth and demand for good talent around the world, even in the developed countries like US and Western Europe. So even if it has not been easy to deal with these layoffs, many companies try to be as helpful as they can to help their employees to find new jobs. And I know a lot of VC firms, including ourselves, are doing our part is to share this list with our portfolios. Companies that are able to hire the talent in time like this or upgrade their talent are going to have a better chance of coming out stronger for their stakeholders. And we also see that even if the Fortune 1000 companies start facing some of the layoffs as well, that also means that there will be opportunities even for them to upgrade the tech talent from the tech community that we deal with every single day. So whenever there's a sort of crisis and challenges, there are also opportunities for talent to share what they've learned from big company to small company or from small company to big company so that that sense of entrepreneurship and creativity and innovation continue. And back in 2000 and 2008, both times, we see a lot of talent flow from developed countries to developing countries as well. You look at, take fintech example, probably Africa is the one place, one region in the world that had more fintech investments in 2022 versus 2021. That just tells you that in the markets that are underdeveloped, regardless of where our economy, there's a lot of demand and growth for tech innovations. So looking to work globally, remotely, there's going to be a lot more opportunities than before as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And one of the things I'm really curious about is your thoughts on the lessons that specifically startups can take and in terms of making sure that they're still relevant, even in a downturn, and just shifting their mindset in terms of just being focused on growth at all costs to a product-led mindset where they're building something that is going to be relevant no matter what the economy, a must-have versus a nice-to-have product.
Correct. Some of the metrics we encourage our companies to think about, whether it's enterprise or consumer, is in time like this, can you get your NPS score up for fintech companies? Anything over 60 will be amazing. You know, you wouldn't just invest in a product and customer experiences, not just for growth's sake, to deliver a superior interaction experience with your customers, consumers, so that their stickiness actually increases during this time period. During the go-go time, it's very easy to focus on growth and figure out different ways to grow at. Then you measure the effectiveness of that as much as possible. But then in time like this, it's much more important to focus on renewal rates. And Bruce Fell had a great advice that whatever you're getting for in 2022 for 2023, think that you'll get 5% less. If your renewal rate was 90%, think that it will be at best 85%. So you plan ahead and test the hell of that sensitivity ahead of time. So you're expecting things to be worse. Therefore, you're much more willing to be more conscious of your cash flow management and then raise the level of service or usefulness to your consumers so that you can deliver similar sort of renewal rates and usage rates than before, if not better. And these are things that we encourage our work company to focus on and have growth become much more organic or product-led. And therefore, the retention of those users that come now will be stickier than before. And the previous the users that you have had already should enjoy the additional work you put in to make the product better as well. In a time like this, that's extremely needed just to stay sort of the same level of retention as you would be before.
Yeah, one of the things I meant to mention earlier is you've been in this industry for 2 decades. You've seen a lot of cycles. You were named to the Forbes Midas list 10 consecutive years from 2013 to 2022, most recently ranking number 6. You've invested in 18 unicorns, including Affirm, Airbnb, Coinbase, and Divvy Homes. I'm just curious, when you're evaluating new investments after all that you've seen and experienced over the years, what are some of the main criteria that you look for, or what is some of the main criteria that you use in terms of evaluating whether or not you want to invest in a company at this stage?
Yeah, I've done this for 2 decades and seen some of the successes that I've seen in the last 10 years. It still comes down to the founders in the market. Is it you backing a horse or a track or a jockey? Well, all three are important. The track, the 10 determine how big the outcome you can be. And within that, you have developed a thesis to figure out what area or sector the 10 will be much bigger than it is now over the next 5 to 10 years. And we try to invest early, try to have a long-term perspective and think as much as further down, you know, through a 10-year window, as much as possible, despite of the short-term volatilities. And at the same time, we also try to think about the founder and the team that he or she is building. It's the best founders are the ones that just know their product or their customer extremely well and know that what's the right hook they can have get the attention of their initial customer. And they try to make those customers, they don't try to overdo it from early on, try to do everything, but they focus on what's one thing I can do for this group of customer so they don't just like me, but they love me. I always love Brian Chesky's saying, and I'll paraphrase here, it's much better to have, you know, 1,000 people love you than 1,000,000 people like you or know on you. And the level intensity of interaction of the 1,000, 10,000 who love you are so important because you turn them into evangelists for the product you're building, whether it's enterprise or consumer. And spending time keep on iterating on that until you have that, you know, 1,000, 10,000 customers who absolutely love you. And that is a very hard thing to do. And it's easy for you to put money on growth and see, look how many users sign up today. And that's an easier metric to get people around you excited, but it's not as long lasting. So we look for founders who are who can think strategically and operate locally and systematically, and then have that leadership ability to rally and build a team around them. If you have that strategic thinking, that short-term focus on operation excellence every single day, and have that leadership quality to drive people to work with you, those are the three most important traits that we see in a founder. Obviously, the underlying sort of thing underneath all that is someone who has a sort of learning mindset. They don't have to learn from their own mistakes. They can learn from other people's mistakes to be able to iterate and improve. And the two people kind of in mind who combine these four elements extremely well. One is Brian Chesky from Airbnb. The other one is Max Levchin from a firm. Both of them are special in their own way. Max is like the perfect fintech founder, extremely strategic, extremely thoughtful, and be able to build a team around him that can focus on execution while they continue to work on product and strategy. And Brian Chesky has a charm and the vision to get people to want to be a part of his mission to make people's experiences around the world much more friendlier than before. So both our founders are different, but they both know their market and their customer extremely well. So both have some kind of a founder market fit or founder product fit. And then that's what's extremely interesting about meeting founders like that and want to be smart and be part of their journey.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think one of the things we've seen over the past year and a half or so is a lot of the missteps or stumbles from companies that have raised a lot of money at very high valuations do relate to them just trying to do too much, right? And going into too many different directions. Because it's kind of that, you know, goes to that old adage, like if you try to do too many things at once, you're not going to do any one thing very well. So I can totally see your point there and it makes sense. You know, it's seems like it's better to focus on doing something very, very well before trying to do 10 different things just okay.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of founders are having personalities. That's why they want to be founders. They want to be in control. They want to build things and want to actualize their vision. And at the same time, it's easy to feel like we're missing out. I mean, sort of, we all high achieving, so it's easy to benchmark ourselves against our peers. And the founders do the same thing. And they worry that their competitors are getting ahead, raising more money, hiring more people, generating more buzz and press. So when you're living in it, it's harder to think beyond that immediate sort of noises around you, to think strategically ahead and have that patience and be able to just pace and space things out and do this systematically is not an easy thing. That's why it's such an important trait that we see in great founders.
Definitely, definitely. So I want to ask you just some other kind of fun questions. You've been a VC for so long. I think you were a financial analyst prior to that, right?
I started my career as financial analyst on Wall Street for Merrill Lynch, you know, back in 1993, 1994.
Right. So if you weren't a VC today, what do you think your job would be?
I would love to be a general manager of a sports team, whether it's in football or basketball. I love sports, especially team sports, watching how championship teams get built. And the team have to, you know, lose their share and learn their lessons along the way to eventually get to the playoff, get to the championship game, and then we'll do that consistently. And it's just fascinating to see the best quarterbacks, the best defensive lines, the best point guard, the best wing players rise to the occasion and rally their teammates to win the ultimate championship trophy. So it's a gratifying feeling when you see everything clicking and working. And those are the kind of things I love, being a VC, a board member, to help our founders grow and build our own team and scale our own business at GGD.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Mark Cuban, right? Owns the Mavericks.
Yes, that was Mavericks.
So this question, I'm going to ask two different things. I'll let you pick which you want to answer. What would you say is the best and worst advice that you've received in your career? Or what is some of the best or worst advice you've actually given in your career?
The best advice I ever received, I think, was from reading Bill Walsh, legendary 49ers and Stanford Cardinal football coach, on his way of building his system, a pass-heavy West Coast offense, and how do you be a championship team. And now his books and books from Pat Riley, those are things that inspire me about what it takes to be a great teammate, be a great leader, and how to have a chance to consistently win. And like I said, you know, I was only 14, 15, 16 year old at the time, and watching success of the Lakers and the 49ers, it's just very impressive to see how they were able to do that. And that made me decide what kind of person I want to be in the future. So whether it's at GGV or working inside one of the boardrooms, I always think of, you know, what will Pat Riley, or what would Phil Jackson, what would Bill Walsh, what would these legendary coaches do in my time like this, and how to build alliances with everyone on the table so we can give the CEO and the team the best advice we can. So those were some of the best advice I received, is how to be a leader from reading and watching sports. The best advice I ever was given, I think that when COVID hit, Airbnb's volume of booking went from, you know, billions of dollars to zero overnight.
Right.
I remember being on another media's podcast, and there were four speakers on it on Zoom. And then I was probably the only one who's so bullish on Airbnb, thinking that in a time like this, when you cannot travel anymore, staycation anywhere around 50 to 100 miles where home base would be the place that people would want to go. Not Paris, but, you know, somewhere in a 50 to 100 mile radius instead for you to get away. And so I thought Airbnb has the most flexible supply chain. If a team can focus on execution, you know, tough time like that, and despite their own sort of the own situation and so forth, to be able to overcome all that, they can still build a very viable business. And I think Brian Chesky texted me afterwards thanking me for support of Airbnb in a time like this. And that's such a small thing that we did for them on air versus the hard work that Airbnb team did to be extremely sympathetic and empathetic with the host as well as their guests, and strike the right balance to help both sides to deal through a time like that. So that's something that I will always remember and cherish with me for the rest of my life.
Okay, so we're getting close to running out of time, but can you quickly just tell me, what do you want to see happen in 2023?
We worry that the current headwind that we start seeing in 2022 may be a multi-year headwind. Obviously, no one knows for sure, but at a time like this, whatever we can, and we have, you know, Founders Leaders Program in place, we have our platform teams with help in BD and marketing and talent search and so forth. We want to be there for our founders. So spending time working with our founders, see how we can be helpful and participate in their next rounds, what will be the things that we want to do and want to focus on. One of the new initiatives we launched this year is the Embedded FinTech 50, where we select, together with 56 other amazing VCs, we work together to pick 50 companies. 25 of them are in early stage, which means they raise less than $100 million in total money raised. About 15 of them are mid-stage, which means they raised about $100 to $250 million total to date. And then 10 late-stage companies where they raised more than $250 million in total money raised. And we feature these 50 companies that's coming out later today. We hope that they will get more recognition, that they were valued by the 57 VCs who are all fintech investors, and hope that more people pay attention to them, and that they can continue to highlight the good work and the fintech revolution that's still ongoing to make the world that we were in much more efficient and better than before.
Yeah, embedded fintech is definitely hot. I don't see that changing anytime soon. Well, Hans, Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking with you. You've got so much valuable insight to share from your experience over the years, and I appreciate your taking the time to share it with all of us.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I enjoyed it.
And before we go, socials, where can we find you, Hans? How can people find you out there?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. You can also email me at hans@ggbc.com.
What's your handle on Twitter?
Hans Stone.
Okay. Simple and easy.
So my full name.
Great. All right, Hans, thank you so much again. Really enjoy talking with you as always. And for our listeners, we'll talk to you again on Friday.
Bye-bye.
Equity Wednesdays are hosted by myself, TechCrunch senior reporter Natasha Mascarenhas. We're produced by Teresa Locansolo with editing by Kel Keller. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, Alyssa Stringer leads audience development, and Henry Picovet manages TechCrunch audio products. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.